This is Side B of the lecture, Japheth in Prophecy. But the first people of Japheth that are mentioned here in the Table of Nations were far away from Abraham, and later on even from Israel, in the time of Ezekiel in the 6th century, the upper part of the 6th century B.C. We find mention of these people of Japheth, and they are far, far away from Israel, but they are going to be brought down into the area of Israel by a prophecy. It deals with the very end time. And in fact, it's our time today, which is just on the horizon to us. You are very familiar with Ezekiel 38 and 39, where it says in there, the Son of Man, speaking to Ezekiel, set your face against Gog. Now, Gog is the ruler of the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Now, these are the people of Japheth that are finally brought into a prophetic scenario here by Ezekiel. And it says at the end of the age that the Lord is going to be against Gog, who's the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and he's going to turn him back and bring him against the land of Israel. It implies here very strongly that this Gog, whoever he is, was once in Israel. But as far as Meshech and Tubal and Magog and those nations there, they're far, far away. But this Gog had been in contact with Israel near this time that we call the end of the age. But these people here that are going to be brought against Israel are coming from a long distance away. In verse 15 of chapter 38 of Ezekiel, it says that you are coming, bringing these people out of the north parts. It says many people with him will be coming, all of them riding upon horses, a great company and a mighty army. Now, they're not coming from the south. They're not coming from the west. They're coming from the north. Now, in Palestine, they could come from the east, but that would be across the desert through Jordan, and that's not the normal way that they would do that. When it says the north here, it means from the area of Babylon and then even beyond that. In actual fact, in verse 5, it even gives some of the nations that are associated with Magog and Meshech and Tubal who will be coming with him. And they are nations which are north and east of Palestine. Look at verse 5. It mentions Persia there. Now that's Iran. Then it mentions Ethiopia. But you must recall that this Ethiopia in the Hebrew is simply Cush, and there were, who's the son of Ham, the firstborn son of Ham. But there were two Cushes in ancient times. There was the eastern Cush, and then there was the southern Cush of Ethiopia south of Egypt. But since all of these nations are coming from the north, and are from Iran, which is farther east, this Ethiopia here in Ezekiel 38 is not the southern Ethiopia, not the southern Cush. It's the eastern Cush. And you know, they're called the Hindu Cush. Even the mountains, the Himalayas, parts of them are known as the Cush Mountains, the Hindu Cush. The next that is mentioned is Libya in the King James Version, but in the original Hebrew, it's Phut. Now, Phut was also a son of Ham and represents some of the darker races going into India and Ceylon and in areas like that. So we find in verse 5 here that these people of Magog and Meshech and Tubal have associated with them northern and eastern peoples. And who are they then? Well, they would be normally northern and eastern peoples as well. Going on down to verse 6, even beyond Persia, beyond the eastern Cush, and beyond Phut, the eastern Phut, we find Gomer being mentioned and all his bands and the house of Togarmah in the north quarters, the far north. So we got far east, we got far north, and all the bands and many people with them. And they're going to come down in the latter days, it says in verse 8 here, and they're going to come into Israel from the north parts. But it really means from the north and from the east. This would show then that these peoples of Japheth are truly the Oriental peoples, along with some of Ham in this particular case at this final invasion here, and they will be having a vast army that will come out of the north and out of the east. And you know, in the book of Revelation, chapter 16, it says at the end that the river Euphrates is going to dry up, and a huge army, an army of 200 million people. Now, that's the army alone, let alone the people that that the army came from. That's a prodigious amount of people. And it would fulfill very easily, very definitely, I would say, the prophecy of coming from Japheth primarily, who gave rise to an enlargement of people and territory, coming out of the east, out of the north in the east, in Daniel chapter 11, in verse 44, where it's speaking there about the Antichrist, who is no doubt this very Gog, who is mentioned here, who's going to lead these forces. It says in Daniel chapter 11 that he has some reverses in Palestine, and as a result of that, he goes to the north and east to destroy many nations, and then finally he comes back to Palestine to raise up his palace between the glorious, in the glorious holy mountains, between the seas, between the Mediterranean and the Dead Sea. But what you have to do when you put all of this together is that the northeastern areas of the world are going to have vast amounts of people in them that right at the very end of the age will be garnered together in a great military force, described here in the 38th and the 39th chapters of Ezekiel, also in Revelation chapter 16 at the end of the chapter, who are going to come from the extremities of the earth to Palestine, and the army is going to be a great one. In actual fact, there's another way of identifying where these people of Japheth went to immediately after the flood, and even in the time of Christ, or let's say in the time of John the Apostle, when he wrote the book of Revelation, he mentions an event that's going to take place after the millennium is over. Though the event itself is after the millennium, which is well over 1,000 years in advance of us, John the Apostle here still is giving geographical indications which were pertinent to his own day in the first century A.D. And here is what he says concerning this Magog, Gog and Magog, or these people of Japheth. He is giving an indication here of where they were living in his day. Now, this is in John's day, some 1,900 years ago. If you look at Revelation chapter 20 and verse 5. He speaks here about the resurrection of the dead. That's at the second coming of Christ. But the rest of the dead lived not again until the 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection. Now that first resurrection is still on the horizon to us. That occurs at Christ's second coming back to this earth. But the rest of the dead lived not again until the 1,000 years were finished. Blessed and holy is he, says John, that has part in the first resurrection. On such the second death hath no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. So the event that's being discussed right here is after the millennium is over, going on in verse 7. And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth. And what nations does he deceive? Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. Now that in verse 8 is to show the great amount of people that are associated with Gog and Magog. And granted, the battle that is mentioned here, which will take place, it says in verse 9, and they went up on the breadth of the earth, the totality of the earth, and came and encompassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city. That beloved city is the New Jerusalem, and fire is going to come down out of heaven and devour them. But these people are over the breadth of the earth. They're in the four corners of the earth, which is an expression in ancient times to mean the extremities of the earth away from the central regions of civilization. That means the Mesopotamian region, the Palestinian region, and also the Egyptian region. That area, or those areas, which we call the Middle East today, was known as the navel of the earth, the central region of civilization. And granted, that is absolutely the case, and historians today know that is true. But in the far extremities of the world, in the end of the millennium, Gog and Magog will be garnered whole hosts of people to come against the New Jerusalem, but they will be destroyed. Now, though that event is at the end of the millennium, John the Apostle here is writing about these people in the last decade of the first century A.D., and he's showing where they were at that time. To him, Gog and Magog, that is, the especially the people who are indicated here of Japheth, were in the extremities of the world, away from civilization, that is, Mesopotamia, Palestine, and Egypt. Those lands were primarily taken up with Shemites, or people of Ham, and others of Abraham, and so forth and so on. But when you come to Ezekiel 38 and 39, it shows that the people of Meshech and Magog and Tubal, along with Gomer and his bands, and Togarma way in the north, they are associated with peoples in the east, like Iran and the Hindu Kush and Phut, who are all in the east and going into Southeast Asia. The vast numbers of people there is who being described in Ezekiel 38 and 39. But in the time that of John the Apostle, he was talking about the people of Magog as well. But he says they were in the extremities of the world. That would have meant our Americas, which of course means Central America, North America, and South America, made up of numbers of tribes of people. We call them Indians today. That is, North American Indians, Central American Indians, and South American Indians. But they were in the extremities of the world, and some of them had vast civilizations, even before the Spanish and the Anglo-Saxons came into these areas here and took them over from the Indians. There were the Inca civilizations, the Mayan civilizations, and others. We see remnants of them to this very day. All of those people, according to the Bible, would have been Japhetic. Now, there's one thing that's interesting about this. If you go back to the Table of Nations, you will find the way that most of the Japhetic peoples got to their lands. It's even indicated here in the scripture. Some of them went by land, no doubt, but the great majority of them did not go by land. They went by other means. And it's even indicated here in the 10th chapter of the book of Genesis. If you'll look at the tribes of Japheth once more, which are Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tyrus, and then it delineates more of Gomer and also of Javan, these were the people that went into Europe right at first after the flood, within that 200-year period just preceding the time of Abraham. Now, they didn't stay in the area of Europe or in regions like that. In fact, it doesn't say that Magog and Meshech and Tubal went into those areas of Europe. They went into Asia, farther away. We even find the name Toblisk into the southern, I should say, in the eastern area of Russia today, and going even farther east, as we find there in the area of Ezekiel 38 and 39. But these nations here, the first ones that are mentioned, were further away from Israel. But Javan was much closer, being a part of the Greek archipelago and regions like that. But notice this, in verse 5, it mentions all of these nations here, all 14 of Japheth, which are part of the 70, 14 of them came from Japheth. And it says, by these were the isles of the Gentiles, or the nations, divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue. So that shows it was after the Tower of Babel that they're being described here. And it says, by their families in their nations. This word isles here in the Hebrew, in almost all occasions, it can mean islands, but in most occasions it means coastlands. And it means people who inhabit coastal areas, port cities and things like that, who depend upon navigation by ship. That is what it means. This verse 5 here is an indication to show that the Japhetic peoples were some of the first to use ships to go into their areas where they were to find an inheritance. And you know, throughout the area of the North Mediterranean and the South Mediterranean, where some of these people first settled. They didn't stay there long, but they first settled and gave their names to that region, to those regions there. For example, Kittim was a name that got attached to Cyprus. It got attached to southwestern Asia Minor, and even to Italy itself. Elisha, of Javan here, was a part of Greece. Rodanum, the island of Rhodes, no doubt, and Tarshish, which was a son of Javan, has always been associated with Spain in most cases, sometimes with Carthage, sometimes with Sicily, but mainly with Spain. The first areas of Europe to be colonized from the sea were by these Japhetic peoples. Now, there weren't many of them at first. I'm going to show that in a minute. Oh, within this 200-year period, you know, we're just talking about just small groups of people that later grew into bigger, greater nations once they got established in the final regions where they were going to go. But these areas right here that were first colonized by people of Javan and then of Gomer, even into Europe, Ashkenaz, for example, was a son of Gomer, went into Central Europe, the area of Germany, and there settled. And later peoples that came in that settled in those regions even took up the names of these people who first settled there. It's just like in Massachusetts, which is a state, as we all know, of the United States. It was first inhabited, the area, long before there was a state there. They were known as the Massachusetts Indians. And finally, when we became a nation and Massachusetts became a state, it was named after those Massachusetts Indians. And now, living in Massachusetts, we have all different types of races: Anglo-Saxons, we have Italians, we have Irish, we have various other races who make up the citizens now of Massachusetts. But you know, there is not one single Massachusetts Indian left. They all died out even before the United States became a nation, and that is a fact. All the people of Massachusetts now are very different than the people who were there at first. The first people there were Japhetic peoples. That is right. Named in that local area, Massachusetts. It's now been taken over primarily by European peoples who came in from Europe long after the Japhetic peoples first settled there. What we're talking about here in Genesis chapter 10 is the first settlements of the world. Not later settlements, because we even have here from verse 14 to 18 in the table of nations, the settlement of the Canaanites in the land of Palestine. But you know, the Israelites came out of Egypt under Moses, spent 40 years in the wilderness, and then invaded Palestine and drove out or killed many of the early Canaanites that were there and took over their lands. Oh, we find that in time after time after time. You find Tyre and Sidon were first established, those port cities, by the Canaanites. But they were later taken over, history shows us, by Edomites, who came in, who were kin to the Israelites, as we all know, through Esau. And we find that this 200-year period here, where the Table of Nations is indicated, is for the first establishment of these people on earth, in the areas of the earth, to the extremities of the earth and all of that. But verse 5 shows that the Japhetic peoples primarily went to their regions by ship or by boat. And that is the way that they colonized very quickly the earth. And that's the way that the people actually got into North, Central, and South America. And you know, they came from the West. The Polynesians were able by ships, by boats, small boats, as a matter of fact, to be able to colonize almost all of the islands of the Polynesians, islands of the Pacific, including Hawaii, in generations ago. And they were able to do it by smaller ships, boats, and things like that. Some of the reasons why some of the animals associated with the Old World never got over to the regions of the New World or to the Polynesian islands is simply because the ships or the boats were too small to hold some of the animals, and then the people got separated one from another at later times. But the oceans were well navigated in the earlier period, right after the flood. In actual fact, the earth was populated from one end to the other by the time of Abraham, That's what this table of nations is showing, mainly by sea power, as far as the people of Japheth were concerned. Yes, and they were the very first ones to colonize Europe and to leave most of their names upon the European areas. But they did not stay in Europe. Other peoples from the east migrated from Mesopotamia and from northern Israel and areas like that into all regions of Europe and displaced these people very early indeed, these first individuals that got there. In actual fact, from the time of the dispersal of the nations at the Tower of Babel up until the time of Abraham and even down to the time of Jacob, there really weren't many people on earth at the time, though the prophecy was that Japheth would be increased, and of all of the sons of Noah, there would always be more people of Japheth on earth than any other. In the period of the dispersal at the Tower of Babel, down to the time of Abraham, and even up to the time of Jacob, and a little bit beyond, you will find that there were not very many people on earth. When it says that the people of Japheth were in what we call Greece and Italy and Spain and Central Europe at that time, it means just very, very small numbers of them at first. There was a population explosion on the earth that really took place while the Israelites were slaves in Egypt. And at the time of the Exodus, we find that quite a number of nations had increased tremendously in power and the population by that time. But the Bible shows in the time of Abraham that most of the so-called nations of the world were just small tribes of people. For some reason or other, God did not allow a great amount of population to come on the earth immediately after the flood down until the time of Jacob. And that's the 10th generation from the time of the flood. For that period of time there, when it says that there were nations on earth, it meant just very, very few people who made up those nations. And you have this indicated in the Bible itself. If you look at Sodom and Gomorrah, mentioned in Genesis chapter 14, look at chapter 14 and verse 1, you will find that some nations come down to Sodom and Gomorrah and take the king down there and the various ones captive for a certain period of time. But you know, these nations that are mentioned, you would think it means thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people, but that's not the case at all. Look at chapter 14 of Genesis and verse 1. It came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, and they made war with Bera, king of Sodom. And then it goes on with Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboam and Bela, which is Zoar. All of these joined together in the Vale of Siddim, that's down there where Jericho is at the present time, where near the Salt Sea is, the Dead Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, who happened to be in charge of those four nations that came down out of the north. Well, Abraham heard about this and how that Lot was taken captive, who was his nephew, by these people to the north. And it says that Abraham then, who was allied with the Canaanites, confederate with them in verse 13, he went to them and said what had happened. And then in verse 14 it says, and when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. These four major nations went into up to northern Israel, which was later on called Dan, and with 318 men, Abraham was able to conquer these four nations. Well, now it means 318 men. That's what it means. Now, those four nations, you see, could not have been much more than 1,000 people at the most, put all together. It shows how small the so-called nations were at the time. And this is just not there in that one place in Genesis 14. You can go to Sodom and Gomorrah. There's a description of Sodom in Genesis 19:4, that when the two angels went to Sodom and then finally went in to be with Lot and his wife, that it says all the city of Sodom, from all areas of it, came and wanted those two men who knew that they had come to the region of Sodom. It shows that Sodom couldn't have been but a very small area at the time. And you can go on in Genesis 34 and verse 25, down to the time of Jacob, once he had come back into the land of Palestine and had made agreement with the people of Shechem, that if they would, all the men of Shechem, which was the central city of northern Palestine there, if all the men would circumcise themselves, then he would go into alliance with them, and he would give Dinah, his daughter, to the top son of the king of Shechem. And it says that while all the men of this major city, now I'm saying major because it wasn't major at all from our point of view, but it was major from their point of view. But while all of the men of that city were getting well from being circumcised, two men of Israel, two sons of Israel, Levi and Simeon, went into them with a sword and killed every single male there was who was recovering from circumcision. Now, granted, they were maimed and all of that, but surely if there would have been 1,000 of them in that city, they could certainly have overcome two men. If there had been 100, you would think they would have, could have overcome two men. But these two well men, who were Levi and Simeon, were able to kill all in the city of Shechem. And Jacob, of course, was very upset about that whole thing. What we find is that when you make a survey of what was happening in the days of Abraham and Isaac, and even down to the time of Jacob, that the populations in Canaan and up in the north in Mesopotamia and down in Egypt and other areas was very, very small. And they didn't really begin to increase until the people of Israel got down into Egypt. And there they stayed down there from some 215 years, and they began to really grow while they were there. And the nations of the earth began to sprout up as never before. But in the earlier period, especially at this time of the Table of the Nations that we find mentioned here in Genesis 10, and it says that some of the people of Japheth actually went in and colonized Europe. It only means very, very limited amount of people. They did give their names, however, to the regions of Europe, and they have stuck to this very day. If you talk to a Hebrew, even today, a Jew, about Greece, they will call Greece Javan. But my, there have been peoples to come and go through that region over the generations. And let me tell you this, the Greeks who inhabited Greece in the time of Plato, and the time of Aristotle, and Alexander the Great, and all of that, were very different peoples than the ones who established themselves in the Greek archipelago immediately after the flood of Noah. The Greeks came in later, I mean the Greeks of Plato and Aristotle, and even the Greeks that were there during the time of the Apostle Paul. But the name Javan got established onto that region there. These people who later on became the people of, I mean, the area of Javan, represent numerous individuals that come from other other tribes. In actual fact, we even have a record in 1 Maccabees chapter 12 and verse 20, and this was written about 100 years before the birth of Christ. There is a reference there that the people of Sparta, the Greeks of Sparta, who were in the area of Corinth and south into that area there, the Peloponnesus, were actually claiming to be descendants of Abraham themselves. And they were not in any way people of Japheth. This is also mentioned in Josephus, the first century A.D. He mentions the same correspondence there between the king of Sparta and one of the kings, the Hasmonean kings of the Jews, about 100 to 150 years before the birth of Christ. Josephus mentions that in Antiquities, Book 12, Section 4:10, where it shows that the people of Sparta, who were some of the later Greeks, they were no more from Javan of Japheth in any way, shape, or form. They even claimed to be of Abraham. And there's another reference that Josephus gives in his Antiquities, Chapter 14, paragraph 254 and 255, in which he says the people of Pergamos, that's up in northwestern Asia Minor, had as their neighbors and as their friends people of Abraham going back to an earlier period. So you see, the regions that were first colonized by the Japhetic peoples into Europe were being taken over by Abrahamic peoples. We even have the Austrian Chronicle, which is a Middle Age document. It has so many corruptions in it, you wonder whether even to quote it or not. But it says the first people to settle in Austria were people of Abraham. And you know, there could be something to that. Because if you look at what the Apostle Paul himself said of the Romans, now, the early Romans, that is, the people who first went to Italy, were these individuals from Japheth, just very few of them that gave their names to Italy, like Kittim and people like that. But later on, others from the east began to come into these regions, and some of them were Shemitic peoples, and indeed some were from Abraham himself. And you know, here is this classic verse, and I must mention it to you, because it's most important. It comes directly from the New Testament, from the Apostle Paul, and it's written under inspiration of God. Now, this shows that God must be behind this. In my view, that's the way it is. But he says, speaking to the Romans who were uncircumcised. Now, this is the first century. The vast majority of the Roman people that were there at the time were people who were uncircumcised. They were not Jews, of course. They were Gentiles, and the Apostle Paul was the apostle to go to the Gentiles. He knew they were Gentiles, but you know, he still said something to them concerning their race, which is most interesting. In the midst of talking about how Abraham was justified by faith, we find the Apostle Paul saying in chapter 4 of Romans and verse 1, he makes this statement, "What shall we say then that Abraham, our father, as pertaining to the flesh, has found?" And then he goes on with an illustration about Abraham, how he was justified by works. If he were justified by works, where does he have to glory? It goes on with the whole story here. But in verse 1, he says here that he's giving an illustration about Abraham, our father, as pertaining to the flesh. He could only have made that statement to people who were literally of the flesh from Abraham. And we know that people living in Rome at the time, according to the Jewish traditions, were many of them were from Abraham. Some of the tribe of Edom were actually there, according to the Jews. But they were certainly of Abraham, though they were not Israelites. They were not Jews. They were Gentiles. But you see, Abraham had more than just one child. The child Isaac gave birth to, through Rebekah, through Jacob, and also to Esau, who later became Edom. That's quite true. But he also had two other wives. He had a wife by the name of Keturah, whom he took to wife after Sarah died, and had six children by her. And he sent those six children of Keturah up into the north country, into the east country, up into Mesopotamia and areas up there, where they developed into nations and spread westward in toward Pergamum, as I mentioned through Josephus there, and into Sparta of Greece and areas like that, taking over these early areas first inhabited by the people of Japheth, but then they left. And these people from the east began to come in. And many of them were of Shemitic stock, of Hebrew stock, of Abrahamic stock. And here we find the Apostle Paul himself saying that the people to whom he was writing in Rome in the first century A.D., the vast majority of them were from Abraham according to the flesh. And that's what it says. Now, that's a little snippet of historical truth, and some people just pass right over it. I don't think we ought to pass over it. I think we ought to look very carefully at it, because the Apostle Paul went into a certain section of Gentile territory. You remember he said, "I am the apostle to the Gentiles"? Well, isn't it interesting that he only went into a certain section? He went into Asia Minor. He went into Greece. He went into what we call Illyria, or the Balkans region today, where Yugoslavia is. He went also into Italy, and we know that he went to Rome, I should say to Spain, which was Tarshish. And he said that he was going to those Gentiles there. He also had contact with the court at Rome, and contacts throughout Northern Europe and places like that. We have evidence that that is the case. But the Apostle Paul, when he was to go to the Gentiles, went to a special group of Gentiles. He did not go down into Egypt or Africa, where people were Gentiles, obviously. He did not go over farther east into India. He didn't go to China, where most of the Japhetic peoples are, or Southeast Asia. He certainly didn't come over to the Americas or anything like that. And they're all Gentiles. Obviously, they're all Gentiles. But to the Gentiles that the Apostle Paul was going to, he claimed to have gone to them completely and thoroughly by the time of his death. What type of Gentiles did the Apostle Paul go to? If you look very carefully, he is saying here that the Romans, though they were Gentiles, were still from Abraham. They were Shemitic. And the people of Europe by that time, quite a number of them were Shemitic. They were kin to the Jews, kin to the Israelites, through Shem, through Heber, through Abraham. But Abraham, you see, had many sons. And we shouldn't forget the Arabs, because Abraham had, through Hagar, Ishmael, and from Ishmael came 12 tribes of Arabs, and the Arab peoples were to be close to the Israelites, brother tribes, and they've been over there in Saudi Arabia, and finally by the first century they were up in Mesopotamia, and they were going into Egypt by that time, and across North Africa, and so forth and so on. We find that they are also of Abrahamic stock, mixed in some cases with Hamitic, but basically Abrahamic stock, and they will admit that they are from Abraham. So we find many peoples of Abraham, especially into Europe, and finally through the United States here, and other areas, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, taking over areas which were primarily established, not by, in every case, by Japhetic peoples, but right at the very beginning, the majority of them were Japhetic, and then later on, other peoples began to come in. And the other peoples had a right to do that, because all the nations of the world have been established and their boundaries established according to the boundaries of the people of Israel. We ought to look at that now. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 8, we find this in the scripture here, that all nations on earth have been given their inheritance by God. But the first one to get their inheritance were the Israelites. And the Israelites had to take over lands of the Canaanites. They did not have it at first, but they had it later. And it says it here in chapter 32 of Deuteronomy and verse 8. When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. And in some cases, it does mention here about the angels, according to the angels. Well, it means the angels over the various nations. And in this particular case here, the angels of Israel, which would have been in this case, Michael. We find that God was putting the Israelites in various places of the earth to be there at particular times. And especially in the land of Palestine, they're going to be, which was normally called the land of Canaan, near the end of the age. And in Acts chapter 17, and in verse 26, the Apostle Paul told the people of Greece some interesting things about how God was the one who put peoples on the earth where they are at the present time. It says in verse 26 that God hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined the times beforehand and the bounds of their habitation. You wonder why peoples live in particular parts of the world. It's because God wanted them to be there. And as far as the Japhetic peoples are concerned, immediately after the flood of Noah, well, within 130 years, and then for the next two centuries, after the Tower of Babel, we find them going into all areas of the world. Not many of them at first, but they went to all areas of the world, and then about 200 to 300 or 400 years later, populations of the earth began to increase very definitely. And how did most of the Japhetic people get to their regions? By ships. That's how they did, by boat. And that's one of the characteristics of them. And when you go to Southeast Asia, for example, it's all a lot of water around in that region, in the Polynesian areas. We've often wondered how the Polynesians, in an almost miraculous way, could be able to chart the vast, vastness of the Pacific Ocean and get from island to island, in some cases, with Hawaii, being able to travel from Tahiti to Hawaii over 2,000 miles and being able to hit the island smack on. If they can go by ship in that fashion, and God can help them to navigate, it wouldn't take any much more ingenuity for them to go right on over to North America, to Central America, to South America, and areas like that, and colonize those regions too from the West, from the Pacific. And in most, when all is finally said and done, we will find that the North American and South American continents, for most of the people, actually were colonized from the West, from the Pacific regions. Japhetic peoples using boats and things like that were able to come in here long, long before the time of Christ. So now at the end of the age, when we look around us, we find that Japheth is fulfilling the prophecy that was given back there in the time of Noah. He represents the largest of all the races on earth, which would be primarily the Oriental races and those associated with the Polynesians and the American Indians. They represent the people of China, Japan, Southeast Asia, and of course over into the Americas with the Indians. The people of Ham are now in India, Ceylon, New Guinea, and most of Africa. The people of Shem, however, are in Europe, the United States, and Canada, and many of them are from Abraham, as a matter of fact. We find Brazil and Argentina having many Europeans, and South Africa, and other countries in South America, and let's not forget Australia and New Zealand. And it says at the end of the age that these people are going to be given a knowledge of the truth. In Malachi chapter 1 and verse 11, it says that incense, and that by that it means prayer, by the end of the age, by the time of the restoration which we're coming into, all nations from the rising of the sun to the setting of the sun will be able to know who the God of Israel really is. And we're finding that happening right now in China, mainly in Korea and Japan and other areas in the Polynesian regions. And if you look at Revelation chapter 16 and verse 12, it mentions the great horde of people that will come out of the north and out of the east at the battle which will take place where the assembling of at Armageddon and finally at Jerusalem. And these people are going to be coming from China and Japan and Southeast Asia. And finally, when the restoration is made under the Messiah, we find Isaiah 49, verses 1 through 12. You ought to read that, because in verse 12 there it says, even the people of Sinim, which means China, will be one of these days giving honor and glory to the true God of heaven and earth. All the peoples of the world, whether they be Japhetic, Hamitic, or Shemite, are going to be praising God during the great millennium that's going to come on the earth. They will know of Yahweh. They will know of the truth. They will know of the Bible. And here we are at the end of the age when all people on earth are just about to be given a restoration of the gospel. And the Japhetic peoples, as well as the Hamitic, as well as the Shemitic too, are all going to be gathered into a knowledge of the truth. I think we are in the most beautiful age that God could give to us. And the Apostle Paul said that the people of Europe, who were primarily of Abraham, though they were not Israelites, are playing a major role in all of this, but they're also other peoples of Japheth and Ham, all of us coming together in one ecclesia, in one body, the body of Christ, to give the truth of the gospel to the world. That is the type of world we have right now, and it's a marvelous one in which to give the gospel to everybody. And God says that is going to happen just before the second advent of Christ. I am pleased and happy that all of us are a part of this effort to get out the truth of the gospel to the world. And the people of Japheth are as much important in this, as well as Ham, as those of Shem. We all need to recognize we are each one a part of the human race that came through those three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Japheth has his part, along with Ham and Shem, in the redemption of the world.